This is the Awful Announcing Podcast.
Three-pointer.
Oh, Huggins! Double honor!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow! In your life have you seen anything like that?
Oh!
LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Welcome to the AA Podcast.
Maddie. What are you still doing here?
Here's Matt Yoder.
The Indianapolis 500 takes place this weekend, and we are pleased to be joined on today's edition of the AA Podcast by the host of that race, ESPN SportsCenter anchor Lindsay Zarniak. Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
The 500 this weekend marks your first assignment, if I'm not mistaken, after the birth of your first child in March. What has that entire process been like for you and your family as you get ready to go back on the air?
It's been, I'm trying to think of the best word to describe it. It's probably been pleasantly challenging, maybe I would say, just because, this whole, I feel like I've been in a vacuum. It's like a glorious, amazing vacuum. But I've gotten so used to my life, like right now for the time being, that's been, diapers and this wonderful time warp of when I can wake up on my own time, but then again, I have no time because my son demands all of it. But it's just this kind of wonderful, like, exhaustion, and any parent that, that has been there obviously can relate. But getting ready to go back has been, it's been really exciting just because this experience last year was so memorable for me, and it, it was mind-blowing, really, and I knew what people said the Indy 500 was going to be like live in person, and me hosting it for the first time and being there for the first time. It was so much more, even, I think, than people were telling me, that shocked me, and it was just such an incredible experience that it's been easy to get pumped up for it, and as I've been able to have more communication with the team I'm working with and really, dig in, it's made going back a lot easier, I think, than it would have been had I just been getting ready to start my 9-to-5 job right away, just because it's sort of like, okay, here's an event that you're going to get there, and for a few days, your head is going to be solely locked in on this one thing, obviously thinking about my family and missing them, but it's going to help, I think, that this is what I'm going back for first.
Now, you mentioned being in that vacuum, but one of the stories that emerged in the sports world while you're away, and I hesitate to call it a controversy, but a story, something that was batted around and talked about, for one day in the 24/7 news cycle, was that we heard some sports talking heads bashing Daniel Murphy of the Mets for taking paternity leave in early April. And you and your husband, Craig Melvin, who I don't know if people know, works at NBC, had a segment on Today about this, about the story and some of the people like Boomer Esiason taking shots at Daniel Murphy for paternity leave. And it went through your story, and he actually interviewed you for the piece as well. How surreal was it to share that experience and to see that this was sort of blowing up in the sports world while you were experiencing it, you and your family, yourself at the same time?
Well, I mean, it was definitely unique, and I think that's definitely why they asked Craig to do the story, because they wanted him to cover the story, which was what you just talked about, specifically, the Murphy story. But they were like, hey, because you're going through this, we would like you to give us your perspective. So the timing of it was definitely, fitting and kind of bizarre that it worked out the way that it did. But from our perspective, in what we went through, he asked me, he said, he interviewed me, and one of the questions he asked me was just, what do you think I benefited from, or, do you think it's made a difference? And I do. I mean, for him, I'm talking about my husband, it's helpful. It is helpful. It really is. But beyond that, I mean, there are ways that I have seen that he has bonded, already. And that sounds cheesy. It sounds cliche, but it's true. I mean, it's not just about, the fact that I have a boob and my husband doesn't, right, to nurse with, right? You know what I mean? It's just, It's much more about the time that he's able to spend with him and also be there present. It makes a difference, because it depends on what kind of relationship I think you want to have and what kind of father you want to be. But at the end of the day, I just think Danielle Murphy, what he did, it should be absolutely his decision. And it, I don't think it's something that needs to be criticized in the slightest, you know, because there will be more opening days. I get it. As a sports, you know, person and someone that loves sports, loves baseball, it, I understand that there are people that think that that's nuts and why would you do that? But it's this is something that happens once in your life, you know, becoming a father for the first time. So the fact that that story played out when it did was why we ended up, obviously, on the Today Show with it. And it was just, it gave us a lot to think about, I think. And it was a conversation starter that I know my husband definitely saw people that were really reaching out saying, like, I hadn't thought about it that way. Or, you know, and the thing is, there's such a stigma, and especially for men. It's like, you know, maybe more men would want to do that, but they feel like they can't, and they can't speak up. I mean, I understand that. I think there are women that want to take more time off, more maternity leave, but don't, because they feel like they've got to get back to work, like they're, in a sense, competing for their job, you know? So, I don't know. It's just, it was very interesting, and it made us think about a lot of different angles of that story, and I've completely rambled for, like, 2 minutes, but anyway,
that's what this is all about. Trust me, this is what we want. People are listening for you, Lindsay, not for anyone else here.
Awesome, great.
if we take a step back a bit, you joined ESPN in 2011, been there for about 3 years now. Take us a bit through your journey to get to Bristol and then what it's been like once you got there and now becoming the anchor of the 6 p.m. edition of SportsCenter, now really being one of the most well-known, well-liked anchors as a part of this flagship sports show that's been around for decades and decades.
Well, you're very kind. It's very nice of you to say that.
I know that'll make Adnan Burke very jealous for me to say that.
Canadians, they have very thin skin, so I love Adnan. You know, it was, mine is like a long, unexpected kind of journey because I started after I graduated college. I went to CNN in Atlanta, and I was behind the scenes, and so I was doing this big, great entry-level stuff in the news department, also in sports for a bit. And then I left there, got my first reporting gig in Jacksonville, Florida, but that was during news. And so it was great. I really enjoyed it, but it was this serendipitous meeting randomly in Victory Lane in Daytona. I went with our sports crew who were covering the July race, and we were waiting to interview the winner. And I happened to get in a conversation with some cameramen that were there from Miami and a producer who were waiting also. And this conversation turned into, you know, a situation where they were saying, hey, we have an opening. The girl that works here is going to Washington, D.C. to take a job with George Michael. And we would love for you to, you know, submit your tape, come on down, see if it works. So anyway, long story short, I ended up getting my first gig in sports as the weekend sports anchor in Miami at the NBC affiliate. And at the same time, I was doing a show called Fins TV, which was following the Miami Dolphins off the field. So for me, it was a transition from news into sports that fit my passion, really, but also was awesome because it was like a storytelling avenue into it, if that makes sense, and at the same time becoming the anchor. But after that, 2 years later, I got the job offer to, ironically, come up to Washington, D.C. to work with George. So it was funny because I replaced the gal that went and did that before. And so I went up to D.C., which is where I was from, Northern Virginia, and I was there for 6 years, and it was amazing. It really was amazing because I felt like, I don't know that I ever would have looked to necessarily go home to do the job that I loved. It wasn't like D.C., first of all, I think I didn't know that I was ready at the time to do that. But when George called, it was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. And going back and having that time there in my hometown was something that I never expected, you know. And it, honestly, George, I owe everything to George because he really got me in front of the people that I needed to be. He helped me develop the relationship that I needed to be a credible journalist in that city, you know. And it was really the time of my life. It was awesome. But then, when ESPN, the opportunity to go up to Bristol came about, it was something at the right time that I was like, you know what, I've always wanted to have this type of challenge. I've always, you know, if you're doing sports, obviously this is the place that for many people is a dream job. And so it was exciting. So, and there goes the crying baby. I don't know if you can hear him. I went up to Bristol, and it's been great ever since. I mean, when I came up there, I did not know there was not a specific role that I was going to have. I just bet on myself with it, and, you know, and knowing that if there were a handful of roles, it would be really, I would love to sink my teeth into. And so I was lucky enough to, you know, to get this opportunity to work with John. And that's really, for me, I love that. John is amazing. And to be able to do that every day, he makes it fun. He is so smart and creative and funny and just normal in a sense, but quirky also. He's just the best. And so that is really the highlight for me of what I do up there at ESPN.
You mentioned working for George Michael, of course, the legendary George Michael sports machine. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience working for him and the impact that he had, not just on your career, but on the industry as a whole? Because I think people in my generation, late 20s, early 30s, were kind of the last ones that could have an appreciation for what he meant to sports casting and this whole highlights industry.
Well, it's really true. I mean, I know he started highlights. Honestly, he started highlights before ESPN had highlights, and it was right there at the same time that just before, you know, if I'm correct, but it really was. He, you know, he was set out basically to create a show down in Washington that was going to be broadcast nationally with the Sports Machine, that was going to show people highlights, that was going to bring them, you know, storytelling of their sports. And I can't tell you, like, when I started covering sports in Washington, there were so many athletes that would be like, oh, I used to remember watching the Sports Machine in my dorm in college, right? But you're right. I mean, that generation is like the last one that remembers that, because the Sports Machine was so started so long ago. But he really was all about storytelling, and he was all about, he had a very specific way of dealing with athletes, the people that he covered, the stories that he wanted to tell. And and he, what he would do is, he had very strict rules. Like, he always used to say, Zarniak, 5 questions max, you know, when you're going into an interview. Don't waste their time. And so, you know, every job you have has different ways of, like, structure and the way that they think, you know, here's how you do an interview, here's how you do this and that. But he really felt like there has to be a mutual respect between yourself and the people that you're covering. And so that was one thing I definitely take from him. He really cared about his people. Like, we were a team, but it was more like a family, you know. And there were times that he would absolutely get pissed and be crazy with us. I mean, I remember the first story, the feature story that I was doing for him for the Sports Machine, and I tracked it, meaning I put my voice on it in the edit bay, and I was like, okay, story's written, it's done. I'm on my way home at night, and I get this call on my cell phone, and he's like, Zarniak, that was crap. Turn around, like, he heard the way I had tracked it, and it sounded like crap. And he was right. And it, so I literally turned my car around and went back into the station at like midnight to retrack this piece. And to me, it had sounded fine. And it was probably equivalent with anything that I had put on the air before, but he had a specific way of telling stories and doing features. And that didn't fit with that. And I'm better for it now, you know? So it was those kind of like teachable moments. He was like my soccer coach who was so gruff and scared the crap out of you, but then in the end, you knew that you were so much better for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was just those kinds of things. And he took so much care of me, both, you know, just whether it was like with constructive criticism or really, you know, being there to just be a mentor. He really, like, really, really took care of us. And that was also just beyond, you know, every Wednesday he would take us out to dinner. It's just that kind of stuff. So it was sort of like, I don't want to say a boot camp because we willingly, you know, were excited to be there. But it just, it was this slice of my life and my career that I really know was the biggest shaping experience that I've had so far.
What has it been like then? You mentioned your partnership and the teamwork that you have with John Anderson now on the 6 p.m. SportsCenter show. What has that experience been like for you? Do you sense that team aspect there? And if you can, take us a bit inside what the daily behind-the-scenes life is like putting an episode of SportsCenter on the air each weeknight at 6. Is there one thing that would maybe surprise listeners the most about working at ESPN and doing the daily SportsCenter thing?
I'm sure there are a lot of things that would surprise people. Yeah, I mean, maybe one thing that would surprise people is, like, when we show up to work, you know, I show up, people show up there in jeans, just, like, dressed, you know, like you would on a Saturday if you were kicking around at home, and everyone kind of brings their suits and stuff and outfits to change into for later. It's very casual. It's an atmosphere that you might expect during the day when we're getting ready for our shows. Everybody has their own, their pods, like our 6 p.m. Sports Center pod. We all sit at the same place in the newsroom, and it, we all, like, put the show together there, and then you walk to the studio, which is literally, like, a 10-minute walk, which is interesting, and so that's where, you know, then your game face is on when you're down there. So it's, that might be surprising to people, because that surprised me, because I'm like, wow, it's so different. You know, you spend all day getting ready, but the other thing is, it's really, I mean, it's just fun, you know? It's an atmosphere where everyone there obviously has the same passion, and it's like you're, you know, you're watching games. You get to talk about what you're watching, and that's very much a reality. But our day is, it starts at 11:30 is when we have our meeting. So we go in for the meeting, and then we talk about what kind of ideas we have for the show. And then during the day, it's just a matter of, you know, putting a rundown together, meaning, you know, building really what the show is going to look like, and then us writing our stories and, you know, being assigned what your different stories are, and then maybe taping some interviews or whatnot. I don't remember what your first question was.
The teamwork aspect with John Anderson and the chemistry that you guys have developed.
Yeah.
Because really,
it's
funny, you know, we went a long time, observers of SportsCenter, noting that there really weren't the classic pairings that you had, like you had in the days of Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann, Stuart Scott, Rich Eisen.
Yeah.
It seemed like ESPN sort of went away from that for a while. But now the past few years, the network has gone back to that, and you and John at 6 p.m. is an example of that.
Yeah, and that's awesome. I mean, I love that. So I definitely hope that that continues to be, you know, to happen even more. I think it is. He is, you know, like from afar, before I worked with him every day, I knew, obviously, that I could tell, like, he's hilarious. I think he's very funny. He's whip smart, and you can tell that by his writing. And then when I started working with him, I mean, I was genuinely pumped up when I found out that I was going to do that show, and that's really why. And because he's, you know, when you're working with someone day in, day out, it's just, it's so much more fun and challenging in a good way if you've got someone that you never really know what they're going to throw at you. Or, you know, someone is going to keep you on your toes, and that's definitely how he was. I mean, I look at him like, God, like one of the leaders there, you know, and someone that, I hope that one day, you know, I can be as impactful as I think he is in terms of writing and the way that he delivers stuff. Because he honestly is fascinating to me. We'll be there during the day. He goes for a run usually every day during the middle of the day. And I swear to God, when he comes back, he puts in all these, like, leads to his stories, and they're all, like, goals. I mean, they're funny, and they're just, like, creative as hell. And I don't know, I'm convinced that he must think of them when he's running on the treadmill, that they're, like, his brain is that fast and just that good that I have no idea how he does it. I've asked him a million times. I ask him what he reads, because I like to know, you know, how do people stockpile their information and, you know, what people's routines are and stuff. But he is just so wicked talented that it keeps me on my toes every single day. It's like there's no, I can't mail it in. Not that I would want to, but you know what I mean? So the chemistry, I'm glad that people think we have chemistry. I think we do, because it feels natural to me, and it feels like he's someone that I can joke with, you know, and I know that he's going to be right there with me if I try to do something that's, because sometimes it's a risk, you know, if someone says something and you want to ad-lib something that can be a joke or kind of like a playful jab, sometimes you don't know how someone's going to take that. But with Anderson, I think that we have that kind of good rapport. But that stuff, it all starts, I think, with genuinely respecting the person you're working with, you know, and caring about them, like, and caring about someone more than just your colleague. It's like, okay, I want to know about your family. I want to know, you know, this and that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Now, if we spend the last few minutes here on the race coming up this weekend, before you got to ESPN, you were part of NASCAR coverage for NBC and TNT. Now making the transition to Indy with the 500, this is your second year hosting the event after taking over from Brent Musburger. What has excited you the most about this Indy opportunity? And how did you become really involved in a bigger way with NASCAR and with IndyCar racing, involved with motorsports as a whole? Have you always had an affinity for racing, or is this something that just came about as your career has progressed forward?
I've always been interested in it, and I just mean, like, sort of following it, but it was from afar, and the reason is because my dad was, a fan, and just loosely followed it kind of with my brother, and I remember in the beginning, like, growing up, it would be something where they had this back and forth between, like, Ford and Chevy, so I just thought they were kind of nuts and paid attention to it for that. But when I was working as a reporter in Jacksonville, I had some mutual friends that worked at the Speed Network, and we had talked about me doing some stuff for them. And when Dale Earnhardt Jr. died, they had a tribute concert the following year at Daytona, and they asked me to come and work at, you know, a concert with them and be part of that coverage and basically be a reporter. And so it was, you know, in the NASCAR world and everything. And from that, I then got an opportunity to be a pit reporter for the ARCA Racing Series. And that was probably the coolest thing that ever happened to me in the racing world, like, from my experience, because it is, you know, ground level racing, that it's families that are, you know, taking these cars to the track to pour their hearts and souls into it, that have been racing, you know, for years in terms of their generations. And I loved it, but it was me, like, learning everything there. The learning curve was, you know, crazy, because I was this blonde girl walking into the garage being like, I really want to be here, because I really enjoy this. I like the racing, I love the storytelling, but I really had to learn the stuff, so I'm not this idiot that's there asking them about their chassis, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great experience. And from that, I did that for a couple of years, and then had an opportunity to be a pit reporter for the Busch Series at the time, and then had an opportunity to do Cup. And then from that, they gave me the chance to host their previous show for TNT. So my experience in NASCAR has been this, like, evolution, really, from the ground up, and it's been amazing. I love it. I absolutely love it. I mean, I feel like there's no question in my mind that that's where I'm supposed to be when I'm there. It's kind of weird. When I'm at a racetrack, I feel different. I just love it. And so to do Indy, it's really, really special to me, because it's the tradition and everything that this race means. And I mean, I get chills when I walk in to that speedway, because it's just, there's so much at stake, and there's just so much, like, blood, sweat, and tears for all of these drivers and these teams, and the risk, too. I mean, it's insane, but I don't know. My dad had a strong connection to horse racing. He always loved that. He loved being at the barns in the morning before he covered the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness. And for me, it's very similar when I'm at a racetrack, which sounds crazy, I know, but it's kind of like this weirdly spiritual experience. I don't know. It's weird. I just love it. I absolutely love it. So,
what has it meant for you to be the first woman to be the host of the Indy 500 and step into this role that has been filled in the past by the likes of Brent Musburger and Jim McKay and some of the legends of the industry, and kind of break down another barrier there for women in sports broadcasting?
It means so much. I mean, it's incredible that they asked me to do it. I'm so thankful that they did, because it really, really means a lot to me. But to follow in those shoes, I mean, it's something that I'm very proud of, because I really want to be able to do a good job and to be able to convey the stories and to get people interested. Because for me, it's like, if you care about what you're talking about, then you're going to get other people excited. And that's really, really what my mission is and what I want to do. And so this is, it's like a playground, because I love this sport, I love this event. And to be able to do that and convey that to the masses, it is a dream come true. And so, I don't know, the fact that it's Musburger's shoes and McKay's shoes, I mean, that for me is still kind of crazy, you know, just like, wow, because that's obviously, I understand how big a deal that is, but it's just fun, you know, it's really fun, it's a blast, and I absolutely don't take it for granted, because I know that it's, you know, there are only a handful of these kind of gigs out there, and so I'm just grateful.
What are some of the top storylines you're most interested in as you begin to research and look through this weekend's race? Is there one driver, one story that fans should especially tune in to see on Sunday?
Gosh, there are a lot. James Hinchcliffe is starting on the front row. That's incredible considering the fact that he was injured in the Grand Prix, and it really, it was scary for a bit. But so that is a great story. The Andretti's, Marco Andretti, that's always a good story because of how long it has been, the Andretti curse that everyone talks about. So that's one that I always, I think that would be very, very, it's just a huge deal, memorable, if he could make it, if it occurs. But besides that, there are a million. I mean, Kurt Busch racing for, the first time IndyCar, it's going to be, that'll be wild because he was really, really strong the past couple weekends. I know that that was surprising to some people just because of that learning curve, but I'm really interested to see how he's going to do. And personally, Juan Pablo Montoya coming back, I mean, he's done it, he's won it, so I'm interested to see what he's able to do getting back into that IndyCar seat. But beyond that, I mean, there are a million, like Elio Castroneves and Ed Carpenter, who now won the pole for the second year in a row. That's, there's just so many, but I would say Marco Andretti, just because that's one personally I know how much, getting back into Victory Circle would mean to that family. So I think that would be pretty cool.
All right, last question. We'll get you out here on this. And this is one of our favorite questions to ask everyone who strolls in for a visit. What is on Lindsay Zarniak's bucket list in your future at ESPN and in the sports world?
Wow, that's a great question. To host the Super Bowl.
Wow.
That would be one. But we don't have that. So that's why it would be a bucket list.
Talk to Skipper then about that and see if he can work his magic and maybe save a couple extra billion off of this new digital center that they've built for Super Bowl. Right?
Oh, I got to tell you something. I was in there the other day. I took my son and my husband up there to just to see people, to meet the team, and we went into the new studio. It is it's incredible. It is really incredible. So it will be it's going to be something that I think is going to be shocking to people when we first go on air with it.
Is there any truth to the rumor that the studio can actually launch into orbit and go into outer space?
Yeah, that's true. And it launches into orbit, and I think that it actually can disappear also. Something on it that makes it disappear. No, I don't know. It's crazy. I mean, it looks like that, honestly. It looks like it could take off. But it's massive, and it's beautiful. I mean, and there are a million monitors, which make it really, I think, fun for us because there are a million different things that we can do and touch screens and stuff like that. But it's just visually, it's hot. It's hot. So I look forward to it. It'll be really cool. Anytime you get, something new like that, there's such a new energy that goes about it too. And it was also just neat to see the way that everyone's really pumped up about it and working together and, trying to come up with different things and ways to utilize all the new tools.
And that'll be definitely something I think for any of the listeners, our readers, followers that have kind of heard about this new digital center. I think we had a story go up today about it. Maybe they've seen a picture or two or heard some things, but when they actually see it unveiled on SportsCenter, it's going to be a whole nother world for them. I think it's going to be something that'll be actually a really big story to watch this year to see the next digital step in this evolution and just see how SportsCenter changes and then how the rest of the industry will answer to that and continue to build their own operations as well. And I don't think it's something that a lot of people have on their radar right now, but it's going to completely change the game.
I think it will. And I think, and for us too, I mean, because you think about it, there are a million ways that everyone's impacted, and beyond just the storytelling and the way we do our jobs and do our highlights and all that stuff. Now, for us, it's like we're going to be on camera a heck of a lot more. And so you have to think about that too. Honestly, it's like you go from a situation where, for the most part, a lot of time you're behind a desk to now, because it's that much more interactive and, interesting for the viewer, we're going to be standing a large portion of the time. And that means that you're seen from all angles. So that sounds like something that people would be like, oh, what does that matter? But it does, and all that stuff plays into the way as a broadcaster that you prepare, et cetera. So that's going to be something I think to get used to, that in the end will definitely be better But yeah, it's going to change the game. There's no question. And I think it'll be really, really helpful to be able to have highlights and stop the highlights and kind of, you know, make your point of what you're talking about that way too. So it's going to, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be all new to us. I think it'll be, you know, interesting to see the reaction for sure.
It'll be fascinating for us to follow along as the summer unfolds. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thanks to Lindsay Zarniak for joining us today. You can follow her on Twitter at Lindsay Zarniak, and of course, catch her this weekend on coverage of the Indy 500 and then the 6 p.m. Sports Center as well very soon. Thanks, Lindsay. Enjoy the race on Sunday, and best of luck as the year unfolds.
Thanks, Yoder. You too. Thanks for having me on.
For all of our podcasts, you can go to iTunes and search the Awful Announcing Podcast. Subscribe there as well. Follow us on Twitter at Awful Announcing and me on Twitter at MYoder84. And of course, bookmark the website at awfulannouncing.com so you don't miss a thing. Big, big long form story, our first dip into that format. Tim Starks from the excellent boxing site, The Queensberry Rules, takes a look back at the 5-year anniversary of the Brian Kenny Floyd Mayweather interview on SportsCenter. And it is a great, great read that I cannot recommend enough. So definitely check that out on the website. Most of all, as always, thanks to you for being along for the journey once again today. Until next time, this is Matt Yoder saying happy trails from the Awful Announcing Podcast.